This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and as always, joined in the early portion of the week by Adam Burke. You can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. We will have the Wes Reynolds Tim Murray Bowl coming up on Friday, December 20th, as Indiana heads to South Bend. First time those two in-state institutions have played against each other since 1991. And your beloved Ohio State Buckeyes, Adam, will be hosting Tennessee, the two crown jewels, so to speak, of the first round of the college football playoffs. So we've got point spreads all north of a touchdown for all four games, the opposite of what we saw just a week ago in the championship weekend. So we got a lot to get to. Obviously, still 2 weeks before these games get going, so we don't have to fully deep dive them. We have Army-Navy this weekend. We have the Salute to Veterans Bowl down in Crampton, the Crampton Bowl, Montgomery, Alabama, as South Alabama takes on Western Michigan. So a whole lot going on, including, Adam, we've got ourselves our new guide coming out later this week.
Yes, sir. What's up, Tim? Good to be with you, man. College football playoff betting guide coming out on Thursday, December 12th. So we'll have brackets from VSiN hosts and experts. We'll have best bets for the playoffs, also for anything that anybody likes in the bowl season. And we'll get to the chaos that the bowl season already is here in a few minutes. But we got previews of first round games from myself and Zachary Cohen, my senior editor. Matt Eumanns sent over here. We're recording this on Tuesday. Sent over this morning some thoughts from bookmakers, kind of an overview of the college football playoff and the first round as a whole. We'll get Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, Tyler Shoemaker's TSI ratings, my power ratings. We'll kind of rate the teams in the playoff. Wrote up some capsules on the bowl teams as well, or the bye teams, excuse me, as well. So that guide comes out Thursday over at vsin.com. Only way to get it is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And hey, we got a holiday special right now, $79 through May 1st. To become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And it's not just like you get this. I mean, the Super Bowl is really not that far away, a couple months away. March Madness, 3 months away, not that far. So, you know, you'll get everything that we have to offer through May 1st over at VSiN.com.
Pretty darn good deal. So make sure you subscribe over there. We are also, I won't announce it yet, but I'm tinkering with the idea of a bowl competition. Probably won't officially get it rolling until those first round games. We do have a couple bowl games next week, but kind of I mentioned it last week on the podcast, getting the marbles together upstairs, trying to figure out how to get it going. We have an email address, by the way, if you want to ever email the pod, cfbpod@vsin.com, cfbpod@vsin.com, and hopefully I will be smart enough and creative enough to figure out a way to get some sort of competition with all of the listeners out there. But a lot to get to. We've got coaching news. We've got injuries. We've got look-ahead lines. But let's just start with first blush. And you and JVT were on the air. Shouts to everyone who tuned in to JVT and Adam breaking it down when the playoffs first came out, the announcements there. So Notre Dame, Indiana, Friday night. Right now, point spread sits, we'll call it a consensus 7.5 in favor of the Irish. Total 50.5. There's a 51 out there if you'd like the under. Then on Saturday, SMU Penn State. Right now, point spread, we'll call it 8. Total 53.5, 54. Clemson at Texas. Texas laying 11. Total 51.5. And then Tennessee and Ohio State. Point spread, we'll call it 7.5. There is an 8 out there. Total at 47. Anything initially when you guys were on the air on Sunday, Adam, or as the couple of days have gone by, jump out to you from a standpoint of making a bet or something that you're eyeing in one of those four first round games?
Yeah, so there were a couple of things that we kind of talked about. And, you know, I think something that's going to be a little bit tricky here with the first round is three of these games are played in cold weather cities. And right now we're still, you know, 10 days out from the first playoff game as we're recording, 11 days out from the games in Happy Valley and Columbus. So we're going to need to see some weather forecasts, right? I mean, Indiana, Notre Dame are going to, I mean, those are teams that play in obviously very similar climates, so it won't be as big of a factor there. But for SMU, the boys from Dallas coming up to Happy Valley, who knows what the weather may be like for that noon kick there at Beaver Stadium. And then, you know, the guys from Knoxville with Tennessee going up to Columbus, where it could be pretty chilly. That's a night game, 8 o'clock Eastern time for that one. So weather is something that you want to keep in mind. Clearly, we don't know right now what the weather is going to look like, but I do think that, you know, based on some of the people that I kind of follow out there in the college football betting community, these totals maybe came out a little bit lower than people would have expected. So maybe kind of building in that weather a little bit, maybe kind of building in, you know, the fact that these games mean so much. And generally speaking, when games mean a lot, things kind of tighten up, nerves kind of become a factor. Nobody wants to make that big screw up early in the game, stuff like that. So I think those are all kind of considerations here. From a spread standpoint, the one that jumped out to me is Clemson plus 11.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, I'm a Gamecock fan because of my wife. I hate Clemson. Not as much as I hate Michigan, but it's close. And yet this line is too big to me. I mean, you look at what Texas did against Georgia. It was not very impressive in either game. And, you know, Quinn Ewers he doesn't have a high interception rate, but it feels like he's not very accurate in these games against stronger defenses. And while Clemson's defense is down quite a bit from previous seasons, and this is a trend line we've been seeing since Brent Venables took the job at Oklahoma, this Clemson team is still remarkably talented. They have wide receivers that can win one-on-one battles on offense. Cade Klubnik's a pretty good runner, all things considered. I have no faith in Texas to blow out Clemson here. I think Clemson plus 11 is my favorite play here of the first round, kind of looking at it now a week and a half in advance.
Yeah, I would say almost all the dogs initially jumped out to me. Indiana catching 7.5. SMU maybe not as much against Penn State. You know, Penn State, it does feel like in that role at home, which, by the way, it was interesting to kind of look at the secondary ticket market, and the Penn State tickets by far the most reasonably priced if you're looking to get into one of these first round games. Clemson, Texas, certainly the dog was an angle I'd look at there. Clemson was the best bet for me this past weekend. Got out to a great start, obviously fell apart towards the end, but ended up getting the game winning kick against SMU. And then, you know, Tennessee catching 7.5. Let me ask you this from a Ohio State standpoint, because I heard this brought up on, I think it was Van Pelt's pod with Stanford Steve, but Ohio State fans, and you're one of them, still, I would imagine, not happy about what happened the weekend of Thanksgiving. If Ohio State goes 3 and out on their first drive, I mean, what's the atmosphere going to be like at the Shoe on Saturday night? I'm sure plenty of Rocky Top faithful are going to make their way up to Columbus, but Ohio State fans were still pissed. You're mad about the Michigan game. What's the atmosphere like if this Ohio State team gets off to a slow start on Saturday the 21st?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so mad that a national championship doesn't even erase the stain of of what happened in that game. And, you know, Ryan Day is coaching for his job in this game, I think. Despite Ross Bjork giving him a vote of confidence, what else is Ross Bjork going to do? Because he knew they were a playoff team, right? He cannot create any additional turmoil than what's already there. So he had to come out and say, hey, you know, we believe in Ryan Day and yada, 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 whatever. Ryan Day loses this game, he's gone, and he should be. So it will be a very apprehensive crowd, I think, a very nervous crowd at the Shoe for this one. And, you know, I think there are a few factors in play here. The first is Tennessee's offense was not good in SEC play. It was not good at all. And, you know, Ohio State would be a high level team in the SEC. They wouldn't have the, you know, win percentage that they have in the Big Ten or anything like that, but they would be a high level team, right? Tennessee didn't do much offensively against SEC competition and didn't even play some of the best teams in that conference. You know, they didn't play South Carolina. I think South Carolina is a team that probably beats Tennessee because they take away Tennessee's strength in the trenches. That's the one thing that Tennessee has in this game against Ohio State. They are a better team at the line of scrimmage, and there's no question about it whatsoever. So I think that's a big time worry for Ohio State fans here, because if Ryan Day and Chip Kelly are going to try to run the football, they are going to lose this game. They have to put the ball in the air. And then the question becomes, is Will Howard good enough to get you through a game against what is a top 10 team in the nation in Tennessee? So there's a lot of nervousness here. And look, I mean, I'm not going to say Tennessee is playing with house money because it's not the right expression to use here. But for Tennessee, they're just playing a football game. For Ohio State, they're playing the future of this program. So I think it's a really difficult spot for the Buckeyes here.
Yeah. I mean, once again, just the way that my mind works initially, it was all looking at the dogs. But if history tells us anything from the playoff and the four-team standpoint, a lot of these early round games have been blowouts. So we'll see how it all plays out. I did find this interesting because DraftKings has actionable numbers for the quarterfinals out there. And I wanted to run these by you. So we'll start with the Fiesta Bowl. That is, we'll go in chronological order here. The Fiesta Bowl will be played on New Year's Eve down in Glendale. Boise State is the 3 seed. They get the bye. So your numbers right now, once again, actionable at DraftKings. Boise State plus 5.5 against SMU. Boise State plus 12.5 against Penn State. For me, Boise State catching 12.5 against Penn State, heck, even catching 5.5 against SMU is pretty interesting there from a standpoint of the Broncos. Looking at the Fiesta Bowl look-ahead lines, anything jump out to you?
Well, let's see here. So I have Boise State power rated a 75, SMU 81. So I would have SMU minus 6 in that game. And I would have Penn State minus 10.5. So maybe that number is a little bit high, in that game against Boise State. Look, I think the difficult thing, right, is can Ashton Jeanty run on a Penn State defensive front, right? I mean, it's a different brand of football in the Big Ten, especially with, you know, those teams from the traditional East Division, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, teams like that. You know, is Boise State going to open up the same kind of holes? The other thing that I have a really big problem with Boise State is that, you know, this is a team that was second in the nation in sacks, and they were like 70th in yards per play on defense. So they'd either get to the quarterback or they'd give up some yardage. Now, part of that is game state, right? They led big in a lot of games. Like, they had the 10th or 11th most pass attempts against. So teams were throwing the ball on them a ton, right? So you get the potential for sacks, but you also get the potential that you're playing soft coverage, giving up a lot of yardage, stuff like that. If Boise State can't get to the quarterback by playing these better teams, I think their defense is screwed. So I'm really concerned about Boise State, even with Jeanty. Maddox Madsen's had a pretty good season, but I'm really concerned that if they can't get to the quarterback, and I don't think that they would against Penn State, that would really put them in a very difficult position.
I would be much more inclined to look at the points with Boise State against SMU than Penn State. And, you know, mentioned that Penn State, kind of that bully, when they are a big spread, they tend to have much more success than, as we've seen in toss-up games, it has not gone all that well. Even though I give them credit, I thought they opened it up in the Big Ten championship game, and I was impressed by the offense and what we saw from them. Getting the ball to the running backs out of the backfield was a breath of fresh air there for Penn State. Looking ahead.
And you know what? I wrote about that. I had Oregon. Oregon was the best bet for me. Oregon did get there and covered. Although, if you look at that box score, Penn State had 8.7 yards per carry. Catron Allen had done nothing for several weeks in a row, and then he really went off against Oregon. And I think it's a good point to talk about that here on the show, is how much did that scare you, what you saw out of that Oregon defense? Because the offense carved up Penn State. Will Stein offense runs a tremendous scheme. It was beautiful. But their defense looked terrible in that game. That scared me, looking at kind of the big picture of the playoff.
Yeah, Tez Johnson, by the way, good Lord, his biggest moments this year have been against Penn State and against Ohio State. He has been fantastic. Coming back from injury, he played against Washington and then was unbelievable in that game. And I thought, you know, Dylan Gabriel, I give him credit, man. I know he's going to New York. I don't think I'm going to be able to cash my Dylan Gabriel Heisman ticket, but at least he gets there. I thought he's played some of his best ball against Penn State and against Ohio State so far this year. But yeah, to utilize Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, over 200 yards rushing combined between those two. They had a combined 7 catches on the day as well. I'd like to see much more of that. And, you know, it's worth noting, right? Oh, Indiana's offensive coordinator has got 1 foot out the door. He's going to UCLA. He's going to stay and coach the bowl, you know, the first round and moving forward. Andy Koltynicki is not going anywhere. He put out a statement saying he's going to be back next year as the offensive coordinator. You know, do with that what you will. We've seen teams who've got coordinators stick around and win national championships. It's happened before, but I do think that's something to note that, you know, Andy Koltynicki is going to be back next year for Penn State. Looking ahead to the Arizona State Bowl, which would be the Peach Bowl on New Year's Day. Texas right now, 11.5 in the look ahead number against Arizona State, and then Clemson minus 4.5. So this is another one of those situations where it doesn't kind of compute to me. So we talked about it. Clemson's catching 11. I guess it is at, it's in Austin, so you're going to put in home field advantage. But on a neutral, they're saying that those two teams are only a touchdown difference. I think if it's Texas, Arizona State, and I get it, I've been anti-Arizona State the last 2 weeks. I've been dead wrong. Cam Scataboo is not going to be able to run all over Texas's front like he did against Iowa State. So if you're missing Tyson, Scataboo, I'm not going to say is going to be completely neutralized, but that would be the one. If we get Texas, Arizona State, Adam, that's the one where I could see a potential blowout happening. As great as Kenny Dillingham has been this year, and Arizona State's the best cover team in college football, I think that would be a brutal matchup for the Sun Devils if they had to go up against that front of Texas.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, the Scataboo thing I think is really important because he just means so much to this team.
He was,
you know,
incredible against Iowa State. Absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, Sam Levitt has played really, really well, right? I mean, this is a team in Arizona State. Last season, they had one quarterback. They played four different ones, by the way, plus Scataboo and a tight end also threw passes. They had one quarterback with a positive touchdown interception ratio. It was Jaden Rashada, and it was 4-3. They had an 8-14 touchdown interception ratio as a team last year. So Sam Levitt comes in, plays really, really well. Scataboo helps him, right? Because you have to worry about the run. But Levitt's efficiency also helps Scataboo because he's able to have some more running lanes and some opportunity to run the football. So that's the thing, right? Arizona State needs to be balanced on offense to be able to have success, I think. I don't know that they can be balanced against Texas. I don't know if they can be balanced against Clemson, if we're being completely honest. Although I do think that, you know, obviously, as these look-ahead lines imply, you know, they would certainly have a much better chance against Clemson. I will say, based on where my numbers have these teams, I have Clemson minus 2.5. I have Texas minus 8.5. So maybe I'm too high on Arizona State, but I also have to give this team a ton of credit, not to mention they don't have to play the extra game for whatever that's worth. You know, obviously, I think the committee kind of, I think the problem that I, the biggest problem that I had when the rankings came out, Arizona State should be 3 and Boise State should be 4. But I guess they didn't want to send Arizona State to, you know, play a bowl game in Glendale there in the Fiesta Bowl. So whatever, I guess I get it. But Arizona State, I mean, look, this is kind of what we talked about all along, right? The 5 seed has a really favorable draw. I think it's actually the 6 seed in Penn State who, you know, gets Boise State in all likelihood. But yeah, I mean, this is what we were kind of looking at as things were kind of shaking out, that this looks like a really advantageous spot for Texas if they're able to beat Clemson, which you could argue is the tougher of the two games.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And you're, I mean, once again, if you've just been blindly betting Arizona State instead of trying to go against them like I did the last 2 weeks, you're very profitable. They've been destroying point spreads. You know, week one, you think back to when Arizona State played Wyoming, the betting market moved like 4 or 5 points in favor of the Pokes. They went out, destroyed them, beat Mississippi State. They closed a 3-point dog at Texas State on a Thursday night, won that game, and they've been off and running. I know they've lost a couple Big 12 games, but they have been the most profitable team in the country. So they get a bye. Obviously, they won't get Tyson back, which is a huge loss for them. Then the Rose Bowl, Oregon right now at DraftKings minus 1.5 against Ohio State, and minus 6.5 against Tennessee. I love that it'll be a old school, could be potentially, if Tennessee doesn't win, a old school Pac-12, Big Ten type of matchup in the Rose Bowl, which would be lovely to see. It'll be a rematch of one of the closest games and highly competitive games of the year coming down to the wire out in Eugene. Oregon minus 1.5 against Ohio State. Oregon minus 6.5 against Tennessee.
Like I said, Oregon, as the season went along, right, we've kind of talked about this. Is anybody great in college football, right? There are a lot of good teams. Is anybody great? Is there anybody that you feel like you would have a high level of confidence in the college football playoff? And my answer would have been Oregon, time and time again, my answer would have been Oregon. Then I watched what Penn State did to them on defense. And it scared me, right? It scared me a lot. Now, I do have Oregon a 1.5-point favorite over Ohio State. That number is correct for me. I have Oregon a 4.5-point favorite over Tennessee. So maybe that number a little bit low there. But again, I just, part of it is I don't know what Tennessee really is, because offensively they were so pedestrian in SEC play. And maybe that was just the conference as a whole, right? Maybe it was just a defense-oriented conference this season. So I have to think about it in that respect. But what happened with Oregon on defense in that game really, really scared me. I actually moved them down a little bit in my power ratings here coming out of that game. Even though they covered the number, I had them a 6-point favorite personally. Of course, as we know, the market was 3.5. So I actually dropped Oregon a little bit in my power ratings here, bumped up Penn State a little bit as well. But I think the Oregon-Ohio State number is dead on. I think Tennessee has the chance to kind of do what Penn State did and win the line of scrimmage a little bit, at least when they have the football, to make this a little bit more competitive of a game.
And then lastly, the Sugar Bowl, where Georgia, the champ, and Kirby Smart calling out Greg Sankey on stage was pretty phenomenal after the SEC championship. So Georgia, toughest schedule in the country, but they will be without Carson Beck as he's dealing with a UCL injury. And I'm sure there's some Georgia fans who didn't want him to get hurt, but might be thinking, is Gunnar Stockton better than Carson Beck? Notre Dame at DraftKings is a favorite over Georgia, -2.5, and then Georgia -6.5 over Indiana. That's pretty stunning to think that Notre Dame is a favorite right now at DraftKings. This isn't a hypothetical line. This is actionable. So you could go bet Georgia right now +2.5, but the injury to Carson Beck, I guess, making the big tweak here, and Notre Dame's power rating, according to DraftKings, is higher than Georgia on a neutral down in New Orleans.
So I think the challenging thing about the college football playoff, and we talked about this a little bit on Sunday on that live stream, which is still archived on YouTube and also on our X feed, vsin.com/YouTube.com/VSinLive, X.com/VSinLive, is that much like the NCAA tournament for college basketball, like all of a sudden now some of these teams are kind of stepping up in class a little bit, right? Notre Dame would be one of those against Georgia. And it's not Notre Dame's fault necessarily that their schedule wasn't that good. USC wasn't all that good, although they struggled quite a bit in that game. They didn't play Clemson this year. You know, Army and Navy are ranked wins, but those are very limited teams offensively that just, they go right into the strength of the Notre Dame defense. And so that's a really big problem. So it is one of those things where I think Notre Dame is stepping up in class a little bit. And so I don't agree with them being a 2.5-point favorite against Georgia. I would have that game pick them as of now. But I will say, you know, Tyler Shoemaker, proprietor of the TSHU Index, his numbers are telling him that Notre Dame at double digits to win the national championship is a good bet, that is a plus EV position for him. And I'm guessing it's because he probably has this line pretty similar with Notre Dame either favored or close to it against Georgia, kind of making them a worthwhile endeavor. You know Notre Dame better than I do, so I'm not going to pretend to know everything about the Irish inside and out. But I think the most important guy of the quarterfinals is Georgia offensive coordinator Mike Bobo, because I think you need to reimagine this offense a little bit with Gunnar Stockton. He's 3 inches shorter than Carson Beck, right? Carson Beck is 6'4". Stockton is 6'1". Not that that's small by any means, but I think you've got to get him on the run, throwing a little bit more, move some pockets, you know, kind of keep him from being a sitting duck back there as he tries to go through his progressions, maybe a little bit more of the RPO game, something like that. I think Georgia has to reimagine this offense over these next few weeks. Now, fortunately for them, because they beat Texas, they have the time to do it, but I don't know what that looks like. And I don't know how great Georgia's defense is. I think they're good. I don't think they're on par with some of the previous teams that they've had. It turns out losing a bunch of first-round picks is kind of hard to replace. But I have it pick them, and then I have them about a 4.5-point favorite over Indiana, and I'm somebody who's been an Indiana hater throughout. So that's a number that kind of opens my eyes as well.
Yeah, Humans last week on the pod bet Notre Dame to win the championship. At that point, it was 10-1. I think Westgate had 12-1. Now, kind of looking at that 8-9-1 range, make sure you look around, get the best number. I think for me, and when I look at Notre Dame, and I said this to humans, for them to win the championship. Now, if you get to the semifinals, Adam, you're sitting in a spot where you can bet off of if you've got a 10-1 position, whatever it may be. But the worry I would have for me for Notre Dame in this spot would be a couple. I don't know the pressure they could get on a Gunnar Stockton with two of their best edge rushers being lost for the season early on in Jordan Botello and Boubacar Traore. Also, Kingston Viliama-Asa, one of their freshman linebackers, he's out for the Indiana game. We'll see if he's able to play if they get to the Sugar Bowl. My assumption would be no. The good news that Notre Dame received after the USC game is that Jeremiah Love, their most athletic player, he's a player that you don't see in a Notre Dame uniform all that often. He should be good to go for the Indiana game. And if they're able to beat them, should be able to good to go, obviously, for the Sugar Bowl. So I think Notre Dame's going to have to get creative with their passing game. They don't have playmakers out wide, but I think Georgia, you could say the same. You look at some of the weapons that they have and who's really scaring you for that Georgia wide receiver core. The last thing I would mention this regarding Notre Dame in a negative standpoint is that you saw it against USC. This secondary, while very good and has some really big time, players like Xavier Watts back there, they're missing their best pro prospect on the roster. Benjamin Morrison's done for the year. And he was a guy that you probably remember, Adam. When he was a freshman, they put him on Marvin Harrison Jr. and pretty much nullified him from the game. And the same thing happened his sophomore year, a year ago, at Notre Dame Stadium. So not having Benjamin Morrison for the long haul is going to be a massive issue. And you saw that Christian Gray was picked on quite a bit by USC. He ultimately makes the pick six towards the end of the game, but he was a target early and often. So I think Notre Dame and every team's going to deal with depth, but I certainly wouldn't push back. And I said this to Matt last week on a 10-1 bet, but being a favorite against Georgia seems a little aggressive to me. And I would agree with you. I think it should be a pick, maybe Georgia -1 or something like that. But yeah, we'll see how it all plays out. And I think that's the great thing about this whole field is that, Adam, before we hit a break here, I think you can make a legitimate argument for almost 8 teams to make it to the championship, right? Like you look at Penn State's path, you could certainly see them making a run to the championship game. Ohio State, pound for pound, might be the most talented team in the country. Oregon's undefeated. Texas has got, dudes, especially defensively. Notre Dame, is a favorite against Georgia. Georgia just won the SEC and beat Texas twice. Like, I look at this bracket, and I can make a case for maybe not 8, but like 6 or 7 teams to make it to the championship game.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I had a hard time filling out the picks that are going to come out in our college football playoff betting guide on Thursday in terms of, the brackets for people. And to me, honestly, the big holdup was I got to the semifinals and I thought, man, I kind of like Penn State over Georgia. And then I remember James Franklin still coaches Penn State. And like, to me, that's the most difficult thing about it, right? Like Drew Aller, I mean, the way that he played in that game against Oregon, people are talking about, he should be the first quarterback off the board in the 2025 NFL draft. I don't know about that, but he played really, really well. Both running backs played extremely well. Tyler Warren's obviously a guy that they try to feed the ball to. Like, there's a lot to like about this Penn State team on offense, not to mention, you have Abdul Carter on defense. But James Franklin, right? The dude just doesn't win big games. He's incapable of doing it. For whatever reason. So can Penn State beat Boise? Absolutely. Can Penn State beat Georgia or Notre Dame? That was a little bit more of a holdup for me. One other question I have here before we get to the break for you is, let's say, again, we'll play the hypothetical game because all this shit is hypothetical. Tennessee beats Ohio State. Ryan Day gets canned. Do you get worried about Marcus Freeman going to Columbus? And is that a distraction for the Fighting Irish if they beat Indiana?
I mean, I think it's possible, but I mean, I guess I would throw it back to you. Is that who Ohio State fans want? Like,
I don't know who Ohio State fans want. Everyone's talking about Mike Vrabel. That ain't it, man. Like, I don't think that's the route to go.
I didn't think Brian Kelly would leave for LSU, and that's worked out very well for him.
It's worked out well for Notre Dame.
Yeah, it has. I think Marcus Freeman stays if that scenario pops, but hey, man, he went to Ohio State, and it's easier to get players to go to Ohio State than it is Notre Dame. He is in line to get a pretty big extension this offseason. It hasn't come through yet from all accounts, but it's in the works. So I don't know if it's a distraction, but if Ryan Day does get fired on Monday, December 22nd, or Sunday, December 22nd, it certainly will be brought up very often. That's for sure, if that is the case.
Well, and because that's the question, right? I mean, you're Ohio State. Your expectation, your bar is to at least be a semifinal team, right? Even in this 12-team format, that's your expectation, right? To beat Michigan and to make a deep playoff run. And clearly I'm not a Ryan Day guy. I don't know. Maybe people have kind of picked up on that already, but like, that is kind of the question is like, okay, well, who do you hire then? Right? Like, who has the killer instinct to go out there and be that guy? Right? Does Marcus Freeman have it? I don't know, but he played there and he certainly would have the utmost respect for what the Ohio State Michigan rivalry means to that fan base, to that program, to that city, to that state. So there's that, right? So I don't know. I mean, like, I've kind of been thinking I really like the idea of Shane Beamer from South Carolina, but also, like, Shane Beamer is really good friends with Dabo Swinney, and it's kind of weird to me, right? Because, I mean, that's an enormous rivalry down there in the Palmetto State. Like, the idea of him, like, being courteous with Michigan's head coach kind of turns me off, which sort of speaks to how bastardized your view gets as a college football fan. But that is the thing, right? I mean, who is worthy of the Ohio State job? Because the guy that most people would think, Urban Meyer, said no already.
That'll be one of the massive and very curious discussions as the playoff goes on, if Ohio State drops that first game. But
I mean, if they lose to Oregon, does he keep his job?
I'll ask you, man. I don't know. I wouldn't fire him, but They got the money ready to go. You'd fire him if they won the national championship.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't fire him if he won at all. But look, I mean, then it begs the question, well, does Chip Kelly become the fall guy? Right? If they beat Tennessee, right? And let's say they lose to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Toss-up game, right? Yeah. They lose to Oregon for a second time. Chip Kelly becomes the fall guy, right? And then it's like, okay, well, Ryan Day and Chip Kelly go way, 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 way back. So can you trust Ryan Day to make the right hire with the OC this time around? Or do they just give it to Brian Hartline, which would make a ton of sense? I don't know.
A lot of time still to break these down, and we will certainly get our best bets as time goes on. Wes Reynolds will jump on the podcast tomorrow. It'll be very contentious, I'm sure, between he and I as Notre Dame takes on Indiana in the first round of the playoff. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's run through some bowl games, just some quick odds and ends on some bowl games, and we'll get out of here. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
We're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Adam Burke over there. I'm Tim Murray. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Just a reminder, there is a regular season game still out there. That will be on Saturday. That is Army and Navy. They'll be playing this at the Commander Stadium, Northwest Stadium. I'll dive into this a little bit more as the week goes on, Adam, but on Monday, sevens arrived, and I couldn't help myself. I had to take seven with Navy in this spot. These two games historically, two teams historically play rather close. I think Army's better. I don't think they're a touchdown better. I think you're getting a little bit inflated because of how well they played in the AAC championship. They look tremendous in that one. Sevens right now looks like they're gone, but I think you'll get a seven again because I think there's going to be a lot of public support towards the Black Knights. Total sitting at 38.5. Unders obviously are cash cows in these games. Anything initially on Army Navy for you?
I got Army minus 6.5, so I'm pretty much right in line with the market here. So not really anything that I can do from a spread standpoint, I don't think. As you said, I mean, the under has just been phenomenal in this game for a very long period of time, and we've finally seen, you know, the big adjustment, right? I mean, there were years where this game opened with a total in the low 50s, and it would get bet down 7 or 8 points, which is outrageous to think about for what's essentially a week 16 game in college football, where we have all these data points already. Look, I mean, last year, 17-11, Army's won, what is it, 6 of the last 8 here?
Yep.
I mean, I think Army wins. Does Army win by a touchdown or more? Maybe. I don't know. But my number's right there at 6.5, so I don't see a strong play one way or the other.
Yeah, once again, I think you get the 7 again. It showed up everywhere. It wasn't like a rogue shop went to 7. So look around. If you want Navy, I think you'll be able to get the 7. But you're right. They have won 6 of the last 8, has Army. When you look at some of these games, the outlier recently was the 2019 game when Malcolm Perry went absolutely bonkers against Army. I forget how much he ran for, but he ran for a lot in that game. And Army in 2020 won the game. That game was played at West Point. Navy was horrendous that year. That was the COVID season. But outside of that, if you're getting a full touchdown, that's where I would certainly look. We can dive into that game as the week continues. Let's just run through some bowl games. I'll just mention the spread, anything worth noting. But obviously, as the weeks go on, we'll get more opt-outs, we'll get more coaching changes, et cetera. The first bowl game, believe it or not, is on Saturday night. It is in Montgomery, Alabama. South Alabama is laying 7 against Western Michigan, and the total sitting at 57.5. This number opened 10 in favor of the Jaguars, down to 7. Anything of note here, or shall we move on?
Well, I think something of note, this line's moving this morning.
Yeah.
And I don't, is, did Gio Lopez transfer or something like that from South Alabama? I don't know what's going on with this game. And this is really it, right? This is a race to news at this time of the year, right? You're just hoping to catch coaching changes, the portal, all these different types of things. I'm guessing there's some sort of significant transfer for South Alabama. I was trying to look through my ex timeline to see if I could find anything here as we're recording, but remember, I think it's important to point out, this is a Western Michigan team that people did not like at all throughout the course of the season. They started 4-0 in MAC play. They had played probably the 4 worst teams in the Mid-American Conference to get out to that point, Ball State, Akron, Buffalo, and Kent State. And then the market just faded the hell out of them, and they were right 3 weeks in a row before they beat Eastern Michigan in the finale. So for this line to be moving down, this is not interest in Western Michigan. This is some sort of transfer injury situation for the Jaguars.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, is, as you mentioned, Adam, when you're looking at these games, there's got to be news out there, so keep an eye out. There's coaching news. There's got to be transfer portal news. There's going to be much more portaling as the days go on, and who will be in, who will be out. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago where in these lesser bowl games, you didn't see much opt-outs because none of these players were going pro, but now you've got the portal. They're looking to transfer up, so that's always something to keep an eye on. All right, the Frisco Bowl, we do have a coaching change here as Neil Brown was fired. West Virginia opened as a favorite. They're now a dog. Memphis, I believe Seth Hennigan should be playing in this one. Memphis is laying 3 against West Virginia. This game Tuesday night, the 17th in Frisco, Texas.
Yeah, this is, Neil Brown getting fired. I mean, Neil Brown's been basically fired for like 2 years, it feels like, right? I mean, he basically saved his job last year with what he did, and then now they finally just dropped the hammer, and not really a big surprise there. I will say this. So last year, Memphis played at home in the Liberty Bowl, so now they're at least going somewhere else, which I think should be pretty interesting to them. But yeah, I mean, if Seth Hennigan plays, and it appears that he's going to, it's very hard to see West Virginia engaged in this game, especially because they're losing a bunch of guys to the portal themselves, including several pieces on defense, which is not what you want going up against an experienced quarterback like Hennigan.
Next night, we've got James Madison and Western Kentucky. This will actually be a day game down in Boca. The Dukes are laying 7. And then also we saw news that Barry Odom, he is gone, left UNLV. UNLV loses in the Mountain West Championship, much to the chagrin of our good friend Jonathan Von Tobel. Cal out to a 4.5-point favorite against the Rebels. Dell Alexander will be the interim coach for this game at SoFi Stadium. So both those games on the 18th. Western Kentucky, JMU, and Cal, UNLV.
Yeah, not much here. Again, I mean, the big adjustment for UNLV with Odom leaving, and then you would presume anytime a coach leaves, the transfer portal is going to start to light up a little bit as well. So, yeah, nothing on that one for me. Nothing on Western Kentucky, James Madison either, other than to mention that TJ Finley, who's played like 9 years of college football now, he's in the transfer portal for Western Kentucky after Caden Veltkamp took over. So a little bit of a depth question at quarterback for Western Kentucky, but that's really about it in that game.
Yeah, that's always a funny one for me is I'm like, this guy still has eligibility?
Yeah, right.
Mikey Keaton still has eligibility. He's in a transfer portal. He will not be playing in the bowl game for Fresno State. All right, let's get to three more, and then we'll get out of here. New Orleans Bowl, Thursday, December 19th. This will be Sam Houston State against Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern lay in 7. Tim Albin, he is out of there. He's headed to Charlotte for Ohio. What a year for the Bobcats as they win the MAC, and they dominated Miami in the MAC championship. They're a 1.5-point favorite over Jacksonville State. Rich Rodriguez, is he going to be the coach of Jacksonville State for this bowl game? Will he be headed back to West Virginia? And then lastly, on the 20th, Tulane in Florida. Interesting note here, John Summerall has shot it down. He's not leaving. He's going to stay at Tulane. Florida gets a bowl game, one of the hotter teams at the end of the season. So I think there's going to be plenty of motivation for Florida. I think this one's actually going to be a pretty good game. Worth noting, though, the quarterback for Tulane, I believe, Mensa, is, I think he's in the portal. So that is one thing to note there for Tulane that I believe he is out. Darian Mensa has entered the transfer portal. So worth noting there. That's a big spread. Florida lay in 12 against Tulane.
Big spread, but yeah, I mean, I'm actually surprised that Mensa's leaving. I mean, I guess he feels like he can get a bag from a Power 4 team, and I guess I can't really blame him for that. The other question here is, you know, in a game like this, Mekhi Hughes is not draft eligible yet, so that's a kid who probably would have opted out if he was able to go into the draft, but he's just a sophomore, and I don't think he's a redshirt sophomore, so I don't think he can come out. But those are all things that you want to keep in mind, too. You're looking at some of the skill position guys. I know that the quarterbacks are going to get a lot of attention when they opt out. But keep in mind, offensive linemen, running backs, wide receivers, skill guys on defense, all this different type of thing. You know, we're going to start seeing the opt-outs for the NFL draft. Right now, we're seeing the portal because that opened on December 9th. It opened yesterday. But we're definitely going to start seeing, you know, more of that kind of thing. The other thing about Jacksonville State is, you know, I mean, if Rich Rod goes, right, this is likely the last college football game for Tyler Huff. He's been in college for 6 years. That's a guy that it really carried this Jacksonville State team on offense throughout the course of the year. Is that a motivating factor, right, to have your senior, your sixth-year senior quarterback go out with a victory? You know, is that something that kind of galvanizes, sort of rallies the team a little bit? So that's the thing that you want to try to keep in mind. I mean, right now it's very messy, I think, to try and enter the market on any of these games. Just because it is a race to the news, you know, and so I think that's something that, you know, you really have to be following, not around the clock, but have to be following really, really closely. A couple of others that we should mention that are off in the distance, but are worth talking about. Miami, 3.5-point favorite over Iowa State, where, as you and I were talking about before the show, it seems highly unlikely that Cam Ward bothers with that game. And yet we've seen, you know, that line kind of wildly swing a little bit. Also Marshall and Army. Marshall losing not only their head coach, which I guess a sidebar here, you go from winning the Sun Belt at Marshall to 1-11 Southern Miss. Kind of a weird decision, I think, from Charles Huff there, but also like half the Marshall team's in the portal.
Yeah, I think that was a situation of Charles Huff not getting, I mean, they let his contract expire and he's like, all right, fine, I'm out of here. By the way, worth noting, Miami bowl history, and I know it, Mario Cristobal has only been the head coach, I believe, for one of these games, but since 2008, they have won one bowl game. They've lost 5 straight, and they are 1-11 in their last 12 bowl games. This has been a very good cash cow to bet against Miami in bowl games. Now, this game is being played in Florida, which I think helps them. But you look at some of the recent bowl games they played, the Pinstripe Bowl last year. You knew they weren't going to be up for that one. They lose to Rutgers. 3 years ago in 2019, or 4 years ago, one of my favorite bowl bets of all time was, I think they were laying points against Louisiana Tech in the Independence Bowl, and they got shut out. And then in 2018, they lost by 32 to Wisconsin in the Pinstripe Bowl. So, yeah, keep an eye on the opt-outs. And for Miami, and the same goes for Alabama. I'm curious about Alabama, too, right, where – you know, these two teams, Miami, if they beat Syracuse, they might be the ACC champs. They might have gotten a first-round bye. Instead, they're playing in the Cheez-It Bowl or whatever they're playing in on the 28th against or the Pop-Tarts Bowl, I beg your pardon, against Iowa State. And then, I don't know, I can't lay 11 with Alabama, especially when you think about where's that team's head at going into this game. Is Jalen Milroe going to play? I wouldn't think he would. He's a pro prospect. And Michigan, they're flying high right now, right? They just spent $1 billion to get Bryce Underwood. They just beat Ohio State. I think Michigan catching 11, 11 and a half out there at DraftKings. I think Michigan's an interesting angle to look at there against Bama, because Bama's too busy bitching about not getting into the playoff, and Michigan's going to be thrilled to be down playing a team like Alabama in Tampa.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And also, I mean, like, I get that it's maybe not as taxing of a trip from Tuscaloosa to Tampa than it is from Ann Arbor to Tampa, but you give people in the Midwest the opportunity to get the hell out of town in the winter, that's going to be a very pro-Michigan crowd in that game,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with all the excitement for the program.
That's the old Outback Bowl, where Big Ten teams used to take that stadium over every New Year's Day.
I think that line is too high to begin with, let alone the fact that Milroe's probably not going to play, as you mentioned.
Yeah, that might be a best bet right now. I might have to just put a little, you know, and I think, you know.
And Michigan's defense is, like, the offense is not good at all, but the defense has still been good all year long.
Right, and they haven't had Will Johnson basically all year. He shouldn't play. He won't play. I would imagine the tight end won't play as well, but outside of that, I think Michigan will probably be...
Shit, they just beat Michigan without Johnson and Loveland.
That's what I'm saying.
Or just beat Ohio State.
So, and they're going to be motivated for this one. So, yeah, I mean, once again, kind of... I don't know what your mindset is. I've had a successful bowl season these last couple of years where it's kind of reading the room, who's going to be motivated. You know, I haven't fully jumped in yet, but like as you just kind of roll through the board, like I'll give you another example. UConn is playing North Carolina at Fenway Park. North Carolina. North Carolina may or may not have Bill Belichick as their coach coming up. Like UConn's got an opportunity in a bowl game to play an ACC team. Give me the points with UConn.
Yeah. No, I mean, and also remember, Jim Mora had that legendary rant.
Yes, he did. We played it on the podcast.
About the ACC, about the officiating and all of that. And, you know, now he has another opportunity to beat an ACC team, which, you know, an opportunity that he had against Syracuse, where I was on UConn plus the points. They weren't able to get that win.
We got the cover, though.
They got the cover. And I think that this is a game that they will be very, very much motivated for. And I don't think that North Carolina will be.
No.
I know Omarion Hampton, a guy with almost 3,200 rushing yards the last two seasons. Like, is he going to play? Because he's an NFL draft prospect. So, you know, as you're kind of thinking about this thing, and, you know, we've got some questions, because in the past we've done confidence, you know, pool articles in our guides. And truth be told, I think it's just way too messy to try to do that right now. Because you get all the opt-outs and all these different types of things. But for people that are still in those, what the exercise that Tim and I are doing here is exactly what you want to do, right? You want to go through the board. You want to think about these situations. You want to see, you know, which players are likely to be drafted. And if they are, and they're playing in some bowl game before New Year's Eve, they may not be all that invested in playing that game, right? I mean, now the other question, though, Tim, I guess to kind of flip that on its head is, now that guys are getting paid a little bit of money to play college football, are they going to take that chance and play with the boys one more time?
Oh, for
right?
sure.
Do you think we see fewer bowl game opt-outs because kids are getting paid to play college football now?
I think you're onto something. And there's definitely going to be players who are thinking about coming back and are going to get, I mean, you've heard rumors of different numbers. We heard about Bryce Underwood. I mean, you hear some of these rumors of, hell, a kid who's going to BYU to play basketball that signed today is reportedly getting like $5 million. Like the number, if you're a first round pick, go ahead, leave. But if you're a third, fourth round pick, there's definitely incentive to come back and get a lot of money from the collective. So,
I mean, like for South Carolina, for example, so, I mean, Kyle Kennard's going to go to the NFL and he's going to be a phenomenal player when he gets there. But Dylan Stewart, who was second on the team in sacks with 6.5, like he wasn't in his freshman season, had 6.5 sacks, right? So he already got a bag to come there. And then now it's reported that they came to new terms with him, which is what college football is now. It's like $1 million or $1.5 million for his sophomore season, right? So like that, is it NFL money? No, but it's still life-changing money that these kids are making that maybe they do have a little bit more loyalty to the program, assuming the program takes care of them throughout their time there.
No doubt about it. Right now, I think the two games that jump out to me the most, UConn +4.5 against UNC, and then Michigan +11.5 against Bama would be the two bets that I would put in right now.
San Jose State?
That one is very interesting, too. Glad you brought it up, Kenny Amatolo. It's funny because it's a running joke with JBT and I, because last year San Jose State was a team that everyone bet, I think I fell for it, against Coastal Carolina. Grayson McCall had opted out, right? He didn't play in the bowl game. And Chevin Cordero was the quarterback of San Jose State. He's returning to the island for his final game. And they got, I don't think they got blown out, but they lost the game outright as a touchdown favorite or so. But you got Coach Ken going back to the island. And right now on DraftKings, you can get under a touch, under a field goal. So it would definitely be San Jose State or pass for me. And that, I don't know about Nick Nash. Is he going to play in the bowl game? So that'd be something to keep an eye on. San Jose State's got a stud wide receiver who will is he going to win the Biletnikoff? He's going to be up there. I know he's a finalist, but he's an absolute beast. Is he going to play in the bowl game? So, you know, once again, fringe players like that, keep an eye on. Obviously, keep an eye on the bowl, on the opt-outs. Last one I'll throw at you. We'll see how they play this weekend. Betting on service academies in bowl games is very profitable, especially in the underdog role. How motivated do you think Oklahoma is going to be to play the triple option in Fort Worth, Texas at 11 a.m. local time on December 27th?
Yeah, probably not very. you know, I mean, I do. Brent Venables' time with Clemson does go back to when Paul Johnson was at Georgia Tech, right? So he'll at least have the blueprint for, you know, trying to stop a triple option. But that doesn't always mean that the players are going to be super invested, super engaged in that type of thing. Because remember, I mean, a lot of these guys are beaten up, right? I mean, it's a very physical, taxing sport to play, as we know. And how many of these guys are excited for 15 more practices and film study and, you know, all these different types of things? So for guys who are maybe playing their last football game of all time, yeah, they're going to be super motivated, but that's not going to apply to everybody. Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely the big rub when you play a service academy is, you know, how invested are you going to be? And the other thing is, like, the number's already adjusted for Marshall and Army, right? And yeah. I don't know what happens with Army-Navy here, but if half of Marshall's team is in the portal, they're going to have no depth whatsoever. So if Army's rattling off these 6-7 minute drives, as they're known to do,
in the cold, like, it's going to be cold. I did sidelines at the Independence Bowl last year. It is cold. That's a night game. Kickoff 8:15 local time. It's going to be in the 30s. Marshall players are going to be like, what? I'll say this, Adam, right now, if you're doing a confidence poll, your number one confidence play should be Army.
Yes. Yeah, if it's a straight up pool.
If it's just who wins, right, you put the points on it. If you're doing a confidence pool, number one, the most points possible should be on Army against Marshall.
Yes. I agree with that. 100% agree with that.
They're a 13-point favorite. I would even lay it, but
it's probably going to keep going up.
It's going to go up, and Army's going to blow them out. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's after Christmas, your coach has left, you're looking around, who's my new coach? you're playing a triple option. And, you know, I didn't bet it, thankfully, on the side, but I said it on the podcast. It would have been Tulane or pass for me last Friday night. And it just looked like a team was like, I don't want to deal with this shit. And if you're Marshall, you're facing Army. There was a game, Army put up 70 a couple of years ago in a bowl game. I think it was against Houston, if I remember correctly. I'll have to double check that. But I think Army Marshall has the potential to be an absolute blowout. And yeah, if you're in a conference pool, Army's number one. Put all the most points possible on Army to win the game. I think that's the way to go.
I'm looking to find this here because I'm curious now. I don't know if somebody asked him directly about it or not, but Army's offensive line coach, Matt Drinkle, he's now the head coach at Central Michigan. And he is coaching the Army-Navy game, by the way, for whatever that's worth. But if you're Army's offensive line coach, is he taking the triple option to Central Michigan?
Ooh, I don't know.
Because, I mean, it's a dramatic change from what they had under Jim McElwain. But I'm kind of curious, right? I mean, obviously Central Michigan is not a team in a bowl game here. But I don't know. That's just one of the, like, it's not going to get any run. It's not going to get talked about at all whatsoever. And I'm just a nerd who likes small conferences. But, like, what would a triple option team in the MAC look like? And how successful could they actually be?
Wouldn't be fun to guard it, that's for sure.
Right? Because nobody's good on defense in the MAC. So I'm curious. You know, since we were talking about option teams. I mean, this guy has been at Army since 2019. So,
on paper, best bowl game out there outside of the playoff. BYU in Colorado has the potential if what
Schroeder doesn't play, right?
Coach Prime said he is.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He said really? He said they're all playing.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, if Shador's playing, baby, that's a game. Jake Retzlaff's coming back. He signed his NIL deal with Manischewitz, so he's ready to come back too. So that could be a fun one. Alamo Bowl on December 28th at 7:30 Eastern. That will be one to keep an eye on. All right, so two best bets for me on in bowl games. Haven't done anything yet for the playoff. If we get back to 7, I'll be in on Navy. I did bet Navy. I think we get back there, so I like Navy plus 7. But two bowl games, and this is why I wanted to do the podcast, just looking around. Give me 11.5 with Michigan, and give me 4.5 with UConn, and I'm sure I'll add some more. And if you're in a confidence pool, I think Army is number one in your confidence that they win that game against Marshall. Anything for you, Adam?
I got to go take a shower because Michigan is probably my favorite play of the bowl season here. And I have to go wash that off.
Wash the stink off you.
11.5 is just too big in a game where, again, Milroe probably doesn't play in Alabama. Oh. I mean, there's talk of maybe Ryan Williams transferring too. I don't think that's going to happen. Alabama's going to back up the Brinks truck for him. But the fact that he would consider it, unless it's just a leverage play, that isn't great because I really was excited about Kalen DeBoer and what he could do at Alabama. And the first year was a little bit underwhelming. So yeah, Michigan plus 11.5 is definitely my favorite play of the bowl season right now. And again, in terms of the playoff, I mean, I already took Clemson plus 11. I to me, that line is just too high. I don't think I'll have much of anything else in the other three games, but I think that Clemson line is just too high when you've got an experienced quarterback, a team that's been in big games before. They're not going to be overwhelmed in this situation. And I just don't think Quinn Ewers throws enough good balls for me to be really confident that, you know, they win this game running away.
All right. Much more to come as the week goes on. Wes Reynolds will jump on the podcast next week. We'll catch up with Matt Eumanns on Thursday. The guide, once again, is coming out when, Adam?
Thursday.
So make sure to check that out. The VSiN College Football Playoff and Bowl Guide. As always, Adam, appreciate it. That is Adam Burke. You can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. I'm at One Tim Murray. If you want to email the pod, we have an email now, cfbpod@vsin.com. And hopefully, if I'm clever enough, we'll figure out a way to have some sort of bowl competition here for our podcast listeners. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to producer Ryan and everyone behind the scenes. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.